Mike, do you like microphones because your name is Mike?
Well, let me tell you one thing, man. I'm going to hunt you down. I'm going to skin you alive.
Politically.
Yeah, politically.
I'm going to get these big bare hands around your neck, and I'm just going to squeeze.
Choke me. Choke me out now. What a psychopath.
Still talking about it. Just could not get over it.
It's great.
Choke me out. What do you see?
He talks about how he was choked out when he was 12 after he had sexual intercourse with numerous women. I don't know. It's so weird.
We're, of course, talking about Mike's new biography coming out this week from Random House. Mike, when you were choked out,
I don't want to give away the whole thing. I don't want people to look forward to something.
Gotcha.
We'll get to the part where I scoop brains out. That's at some point.
We're, of course, talking about Alex Jones in the last episode, the fun things he said.
Yeah.
About being molested, I guess, or something, and that was weird.
I mean, a normal person would consider that molested. He thought it would be really cool to tell Joe Rogan and his juiced-out friend, which apparently, I don't know, I think his name was, what, Johnny Bravo or whatever? whatever the fuck that is. I thought he was like an MMA fighter or something, but I couldn't tell if he was really a flat earther or not.
Oh, I think that was a troll, maybe.
Really? Man, kind of brilliant, actually. Because he got Alex so riled up.
Yeah, because like, he also said to Alex that like late-term abortions aren't even a thing, and Alex was like, seriously almost punched him out.
Then why were they voted on it in the goddamn Senate?
I mean, he was really just keyed up.
He's on fucking drugs or supplements or something, dude. There's no fucking way.
He looked really unhealthy. Not that I'm worried about his health.
No, but
he looked like more bloated than usual.
Inescapably. Just like, so gross.
He was pretty much poured into that NASA t-shirt. it was really bad. I mean, Alex, come on the pod anytime and talk about your health. We'll straighten you out.
It's just incredible that he's basically
a cult figure.
Well, yeah, I mean, he could say that stuff on the street and no one would listen to him, but he has the phone of the fucking president. And
awesome, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's cool.
That's great. Not to keep rehashing this, but it just occurred to me, one of the most surreal things about the Alex Jones rant where he wanted to start war with Joe Rogan was he was on Rogan for, you know, selling all of his supplements and stuff.
Absolutely.
Meanwhile, Alex Jones is selling worse stuff.
Yeah.
Like straight up homeopathic stuff. Let me get this little micron of gold and dilute it into like a friggin' cup of water, and this will cure all your ills.
It's awesome. It's a great grift.
Yeah, it's awesome. He's
the king of it.
He has mastered the grift.
Oh, he's
for sure. So speaking of mastering the grift, this is episode number 26 of this awful podcast. Now, Chris has instructed me to no longer give out the phone number or the email address or the Twitter handle. So
right.
I guess we're just in a social media blackout.
We are, yeah.
Thanks to our social media manager, Chris.
I'm sure there are a lot of people listening who've never seen our show on social media. Mike, you okay over there, bud?
Have you ever listened to a podcast before, Chris?
What the fuck did you just say to me? We want to recalibrate our language, Michael?
So you've never listened to a podcast before?
Buddy, I don't even know what a freaking radio is. And you got me over here. I don't know what the wazoo this ding-a-ling is. So this is out of control.
What the wazoo? All right. Well, now that we get that out of the way... hey, Chris, what's up?
Mike, I'm just chilling in my house.
In Cedar Rapids?
That's what Hillary said. Yeah. I said my house, though. So.
Yeah, are you chilling? You look like you're getting quite heated,
well,
actually.
You know, I'm just trying to put on a good show for the people.
I'm starting to get a little heated myself. Oh, anyone keeping track at home, it's 121.
Yeah, it's 121. Yeah.
We did it again.
We did
it again, goddammit.
Last time it was like four. One is
like, when we started.
Yeah.
Actually, we started last time at like 3.
Oh, really?
But it eventually extended to like 10 of 5.
It's so cool that I have a job where no one cares if I live or die. So.
I don't have to work tomorrow, so I don't care what the fuck time I get out
of
here.
Oh, are you fucking wild, man.
Actually,
that's what I like about
it. I do kind of want to go home and sleep in my own bed, but
you know,
you're not until this show is over.
You know what bed you're sleeping in tonight, cutie pie.
Chris, what interesting stuff happened to you this week?
One thing I did want to
tout. Okay.
So, Street Fight Boys from the Street Fight Podcast are doing a little East Coast tour, and they're going to be in Boston. And I don't know exactly what, but I'm supposed to be doing a little something-something with them on stage there.
Once again, Chris becoming notable for a podcast other than our own. Once again.
Oh, well, I don't think I'll become notable. It'll be...
Well, they're going to, like, put you up on a stage and just throw pies at your ass, right?
Yeah, I hope they throw pies, like, directly into my asshole. I'll talk to Brian about that.
Okay.
Yeah. Just be like, and Brian, if it hits my cheek, I'm off stage.
It's in the asshole or nothing.
Yeah. If it's not right, you better get a guy who knows what the fuck he's doing. Because I am not some two-bit Boston boy. I know how you big-timers think. I want it right in my ass.
So, a lot of people said that they liked our last episode.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people...
are dumb, right?
Weird stuff.
Yeah. Some people are really weird.
Yeah, I wish I had a better week.
That's all right.
You know, trying to think. Something stupid must have happened to me. I know it.
Oh, yeah. Stupid things happen to you.
Oh, my God. I know it.
Yeah. Let's retrace your steps from today. So you got a pizza today.
Yep.
You got a pizza yesterday. The day before. The day before that. The day before that.
I can't remember. I can't remember when the last time I got pizza was.
Today.
Oh, yeah.
It was just a few hours ago.
Yeah, you're right.
You're right.
It was pizza. Now, Mike.
Christopher.
How the fuck about?
Hold on. Something big's coming. I want to hear it.
All right. Everyone's... got their hands up their ass.
There's a build-up.
Everyone's honking their horns. Let's do some frickin' segments on the pod. Do some motherfucking segments. Jesus Christ.
I love that.
It never stops being funny.
I don't know why.
Any sentence, any phrase, just do a dubstep fucking bass drop to it. Never stops.
The house mix of everything.
Put your motherfucking daughter on the phone.
Oh, my God. That's so good. That's a good callback.
Yeah.
To the most fucked up thing you've ever done.
Shout out to Skrillex, friend of the show.
Skrillex. Wow. Mm. Skrillex still a thing?
I don't know.
So what's the first clip, Chris? What's the first clip that we're going to watch?
Oh, well, the first clip, Mike, that
right?
I found.
By the way, a quarter or two.
Yeah, just it's powerful, I think.
I'd like to note the passage of time because it's like this weird alternate reality on the podcast where when you're listening... 2 minutes will pass, but like 45 minutes will pass for us.
It's a totally different world, yeah.
Yeah, it's multidimensional. Oh, shit.
This is going to be an intense up.
You think so?
I feel like we're laying a lot of truths down for the people. Maybe some people aren't ready for
it. I'm not sure. I'm not sure. I'm not sure what you're referring to.
It's a lot of powerful energy.
Sometimes,
in the room.
Sometimes Ben Shapiro needs to be put in his place.
Yeah, I agree.
Which is not difficult if you have a large mallet.
Yeah, you can just slide them under the refrigerator.
I'm going to save you for later, little guy.
How did this get down here? Oh, my goodness.
Did you leave a fascist under the fridge, man?
This dang dog.
Just lying in the middle of the floor. The dang dog got in the trash again.
Yeah.
Dynamite.
Oh, shit. All right.
So we've covered a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Covered Bo, Ben Shapiro, fascism, and Imus.
Yeah.
Sounds like really a rounded out show. What else can we introduce to the show?
Well, Mike, as you know, I've been calling out AOC for all kinds of shit. Yes. She is just wilding, and someone needs to fucking calm her down and make sure she... Yeah.
Whoa, damn.
And now I'm hearing these reports all of a sudden that AOC is an actress or a Manchurian candidate. Yeah, I don't really... Never really trusted her, you know, very suspicious of AOC.
You guys still in a fight?
We're in a big fight still.
Well, that's too bad.
Yeah, she...
I had big hopes for you. I already bought you guys a toaster.
Do you know that she changed the Netflix password? I mean, do you know how fucking petty that is? Anyway, so I was mad at her already, you know what I mean? She's already getting on my bad side, and then I find out she's a fucking actress. She's not even real. She's just some, like, deep state plant.
Really?
Yes, really.
What is your proof of this? I want to see your receipt.
Ever hear of a little fucking father of a dog killer named Mike Huckabee?
What?
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah. Hmm.
So Mike Huckabee says that AOC is an actress.
Well, let's go to the clip, Mike.
All right. This is courtesy of MediaMatters.org.
Media Matter.
All right, so courtesy of Media Matters, on Fox and Friends, Mike Huckabee, more like Mike Fuckabee. Ha!
Suckabee.
Oh, shit. That's lewd. Piece of shit.
Yeah.
All right, let's bring in Mike Huckabee, Fox News contributor, former governor of Arkansas, former presidential candidate, and the author of a great book. It's called Rare, Medium, or Well Done, Make the Most of Your Life.
It's actually not the name of the book at all. It's Rare, Medium, or Done Well.
Wow, good catch.
Fucking idiots.
That's really funny.
Mike, good morning to you.
Good morning, everybody. Good to be with you guys.
It's good to have you.
So is it about time we saw an ad already on AOC and maybe Republicans have something to go on? Is this a template for the president?
You know, it's amazing how big a deal she has become to be a 29-year-old with no major accomplishments to her credit other than making some really bizarre policy pronouncements about the new Green Deal and getting rid of the Amazon jobs in New York.
I love how people attribute that to her. Like, she has the power to stop a multi-billion dollar corporation from coming to New York. I'm not saying she didn't have a part of it, but... She certainly didn't stop it by herself.
Yeah, and have any of these fucking geniuses actually looked at the numbers of that fucking deal and, like, the fucking community impact costs that were involved that they were just supposed to swallow up and the tax deals? No, nobody gives a shit. Because it's fine when rich people get fucking tax breaks and everyone else has to fucking pay for it. Mm-hmm. That's not raising taxes. That's just good business. Fucking makes me sick. It really does. Amazon paid $0 in taxes, but I guess we're supposed to get more tax breaks to put more of a tax burden on fucking New York. It's ridiculous.
She's making quite a name for herself, and I hope that she continues to be the face of the Democratic Party. It's the best thing that Donald Trump and the Republicans have going for them in 2020.
Right. Somebody's writing her questions. I saw the questions at Michael Cohen and saw the questions at Wilbur Ross, and there are some forces behind her. I think there's a story there.
What?
Well, there very well could be. I know there has been some allegations that she was almost like the Manchurian candidate, recruited, prepared. You know, I don't know, but the point is that
I don't know.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of New Yorkers who would love to have seen those 25,000 Amazon jobs that may turn out in force and say, thank you, but no thank you. Bye-bye. 2 years is all we can handle.
So
that was really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because she single-handedly turned away Amazon, she's a Manchurian candidate.
So if we want to just hop on down, I think this is what Huckabee is talking about, this report that is going out there that AOC is some kind of Manchurian candidate or actress representing dark forces.
Okay. So this is a video by...
Mr. Reagan is Mr. his Reagan. YouTube handle. And just to set the scene for you, he is sitting in what appears to be a like high-rise studio hotel room something. Yeah. Got some skyscrapers in the background. He has that old-timey Glenn Beck, like Johnny Carson microphone in front of him.
It's a Yeti mic. It is.
He's got a freaking Yeti mic. And he's got a Reagan mug.
Yeah.
And a Reagan logo there. So
$10 that he's got a Reagan tattoo on his ass.
And you know what? I bet he can't even name three of Reagan's albums.
The brains behind Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Mr. Reagan.
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is not really the congresswoman of New York's 14th Congressional District.
Oh.
She is essentially an actress. She's merely playing the part of a New York congresswoman. Mm. I know this sounds crazy, but yes. Bear with me. In 2017, a group called the Justice Democrats held auditions for potential congressional candidates that they would run on their platform.
What?
Literally, this happens all the time. And what the fuck? Literally, this is fucking... totally normal for the party to ask people to... Okay. Literally all the time.
Oh, shit.
For various congressional seats throughout the country. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's brother, Gabriel, submitted her for the role. Now, I've auditioned for many acting roles in my day. I've also cast many of my own projects. I know how this works. If you find somebody...
You did.
So he's saying that she's an illegitimate actor.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm an actor, by the way. That's a strong opening statement for your argument.
He's cast many of his own roles.
He's like, we can't trust actors. Speaking as an actor who cannot be trusted, I know this.
I wonder if he starred in a little film called Double Bow 7.
He looks like... Jason Schwartz, if he never fucked.
Oh, shit. Yes.
The right? A little bit.
Schwartzman?
Schwartzman, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah.
With star power. Even if they don't 100% fit the part, you go with it. Obviously, AOC has star power. Just look at her. She's a superstar, the most famous person in Congress, maybe ever. Their casting ever. Was perfect. Now, I didn't have to go digging for evidence for this. Because they freely admit it. They brag about it.
Back in 2016, we put out a...
Okay, this is Alexandra Rojas, the executive director of Justice Democrats.
I believe this might be taken from a documentary about... that followed a few female candidates for Congress that included AOC.
Okay.
Call for nominations. We got over 10,000 nominations. Out of those 10,000 nominations, we found Alexandria.
My brother told me that he had sent
nominations.
Yeah.
It seems like something. Okay. Seems like something you'd normally do in an election.
It's really not unusual at all, man. Like, it's so funny. Like, the Republicans do it too.
Sent my nomination in the summer, but I was like literally working out of a restaurant, and I was like, there's no way.
A casting call. They had a casting call. They cast Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in the role of Congresswoman.
Nominated.
And they did this so they could promote their own agenda.
Yeah, politics.
In this video, I'm going to make three very serious accusations against Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Nice.
One, she did not actually run for Congress.
Two, she will not call me back.
She is a puppet congresswoman. And three, the people controlling her are very dangerous. The first point I have already made. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez did not run. She was run. What I mean by that is Alexandria did not take it upon herself to run for Congress. She was used by this group, the Justice Democrats, as a figurehead through which they could gain control of New York's 14th Congressional District.
What the fuck, bro?
Isn't that otherwise called an election?
Yeah. He's like, he didn't run. And it's like, ah, actually, she did.
She did. And hey, check it out. And she won.
Yeah, against, yeah. Like, what, the fourth most powerful Dem in the house or something?
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that proves it for me.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I don't think I need to hear the other 2 points, actually.
You know, these guys not only scripted and produced AOC's beautiful campaign video, but they organized the entire grassroots campaign effort. They handled all the fundraising, the social media, the get out the vote effort. They turned Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez into a brand, and they used that brand to take control of that House seat.
What the fuck do you think an election is, dude?
He's like, they made commercials. They made policy positions. She shook hands.
People of New York did not elect a Puerto Rican girl from Brooklyn to represent them. They elected an Indian guy from Texas and a white guy from Tennessee. My second accusation.
Okay.
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is a puppet congresswoman. AOC does not make her own policy decisions. She does not decide which way she votes on legislation. She defers completely to her team. This is a serious claim, I know, but consider the following evidence. This is a video of
Corbin
Trent.
That's not a serious claim.
One of Alexandria...
What is he talking... Oh, she relies on her team?
Okay, well, let's hear him out. Let's hear him out, Chris.
This is me.
I know you're a skeptic, but you know he's got me on the campaign thing. You know, like she definitely ran a campaign. So
she defers completely to her team. This is a serious claim, I know, but consider the following evidence. This is a video of Corbin Trent, one of Alexandria's top advisors, speaking with Zach Alexey, the Saul Alinsky-style strategy expert who organized much of AOC's campaign. Corbin Trent...
The Saul Alinsky-style, right? That classic style we all know.
They drag out old Saul. Once again.
Our strategy expert who organized much of AOC's campaign. Corbin Trent is now Alexandria's top congressional aide.
And what's the stat that we were looking at earlier about
how much people are making?
Yeah, about low-income people and how big of a percent of our society that is.
They make 40%. Well, people that make $19,999 a year or less. So people that make $20,000 a year or less make up right around 40% of Americans, right? So it's
40% of Americans make less than $20,000.
Yeah, yeah. It's like 60 million people make less than $20,000 a year.
200 million Americans make...
So now this is 7/26/2018 AOC talking on a talk show.
200 million Americans make less than $20,000 a year. That's 40% of this country.
40% of Americans make less than $20,000.
That's 40% of this country.
So the claim, I guess, is that one time 4 years ago, AOC's chief of staff recited a well-known statistic about wealth inequality, and then 4 years later, AOC said the same. So, do you see? Do you see now? I think what he's going for here is that she doesn't know what she's talking about.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Americans make less than 20,000.
That's 40% of this country.
These guys are coaching her. They're scripting everything she says. You notice when she goes off script because she suddenly starts babbling incomprehensibly. The girl in this next clip is now the head of the Justice Democrats. Her name, Alexandra Rojas.
Really, I think a big anchor piece is the Green New Deal and talking about it in a frame of social, racial, and economic justice and a mobilization of our economy and our society at the scale of what we did during World War II.
The Green New Deal... How is that going to be different?
I think what we're calling for is a mobilization of our economy, of our society, on the scale that we haven't seen since World War II.
Like, this is the war. This is our World War II.
It's clear.
If I'm following him correctly, he's alleging that among the Justice Democrats and AOC, there is a common platform.
They're using the same talking points.
Green New Deal.
So she's controlled.
And the
that's it.
And the wealth inequality.
Well, like, even so what? So what if it's the same talking point? So what? So what if she takes talking points from her team? They're a fucking team, you fucking idiot. What the fuck does that fucking mean?
That's what they're supposed to
do. It's fucking insane. What politician doesn't do that, you fucking dumbass? For fucking Christ's sakes.
Oh, fuck. That's what they're supposed to do.
He's like, oh, isn't it interesting that so many of them agree on the policy positions they fucking work to fucking advocate for?
Interesting.
That AOC is being coached on absolutely every policy point she makes.
Now, again, like, I just can't get over that she's being coached. No shit, dude. What the fuck do you think lobbyists do? What the fuck do you think staff exists for? You think they all just go in there and they're like, I have great ideas all on my own? No, they don't, you fucking idiot!
So they're highlighting some words out of the New Yorker that I can't quite see. The highlighted words from the New Yorker.
You want me to read it?
Yeah, can you read it? Because I can't read it. I'm old.
The Green New Deal, which in the past month has come to define the progressive cause in Washington, exists in its most authoritative form as an 11-page Google Doc. And this is highlighted. The document was written over a single December weekend by the staff of freshman representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and three like-minded progressive groups, none of which existed 2 years ago.
Huh.
And then ellipses. We spent the weekend learning how to put laws together, Ocasio-Cortez's chief of staff. Sorry, but I have no idea how to pronounce that. Told me.
AOC's chief of staff.
Yeah. We looked up how to write resolutions. And so the takeaway, I guess, is that they're really stupid. It's interesting that they don't even know how to fucking write laws, and their law's insanely popular. That's fucking weird.
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez had zero to do with it. As far as I could find, she wasn't even in the room. Now, this is AOC's landmark legislation proposal. It essentially sums up her entire platform and lays out everything she wants to do in Congress. Uh-huh. She didn't even participate in the drafting of the legislation.
How do you know?
No one can see this right now, but... So he's, like, talking to a webcam, and he has, like, a bunch of lighting and stuff around him at this desk. It looks like it's in a hotel room that he's trying to pretend is his house.
Yes.
And there's, like, another camera that they keep panning to, like, edit, I guess.
And he's got a little remote control in his hand that he's obviously pressing every time the camera changes angles, and it's so fucking corny.
It's like trying to seem, like, so edgy, and, bro, you look like a fucking dork.
And the camera he keeps switching to, which shows him at, like, an off angle, is obviously, like, some sort of handheld shoulder-mounted camera or whatever.
Not cool.
No, it's just fucking lame.
It's fucking lame, bro.
And again, these people aren't even trying to cover this up. They're proud of it. Again, AOC is a figurehead, a mouthpiece. The congressional seat is being operated behind the scenes. Old interviews show that the Justice Democrats initially declared that they wanted candidates of substance. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was a bartender. Now,
he did a little eyebrow move when he said that, too. It's like, yeah, all right. She's a freaking bartender.
Bartender.
Huh? You know that Paul Ryan, I think, was the same age as AOC when he went into Congress? No one said that shit.
No. Yeah. No. What was he before he was in Congress? Fucking garbage man?
Well.
Respect to garbage man, by the way.
You could argue he was an even bigger garbage man in the freaking house, huh?
A garbage man.
Ah, yes. A man of garbage. Not a sanitation engineer. So.
Who is more useful to an evil organization trying to take over Congress? A principled politician who happens to align with their views, or a pawn? A malleable innocent who they can manipulate. Somebody completely ignorant of politics who must rely wholly on them to direct all her political positions, statements, and votes. AOC has had enough embarrassing gaffes to know that if she goes off script, it hurts. It can humiliate her.
What?
So she has become absolutely dependent on the instruction of her handlers. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez seems like, to anyone unfamiliar with her arrangement, like a bit of an enigma. Most of the time, she seems to bumble along with no apparent idea about what she's doing. But
kind of like you're
sometimes
doing now.
She says and does things that seem kind of brilliant.
Let's play a lightning round game. I'm going to be the bad guy, which I'm sure half the room would agree with anyway. And I want to get away with as much bad things as possible, ideally to enrich myself and advance my interest, even if that means putting my interests ahead of the American people. The limits that are placed on me as a congresswoman, compared to the executive branch and compared to, say, the President of the United States, would you say that Congress has the same sort of standard of accountability?
In terms of laws that apply to the president, yeah, there's just almost no laws at all that apply to the president.
So I'm being held, and every person in this body is being held to a higher ethical standard than the President of the United States.
That's right, because there are some committee ethics committee rules that apply to you.
And it's already super legal, as we've seen, for me to be a pretty bad guy. So it's even easier for the President of the United States to be one, I would assume.
That's right.
Thank you very much.
This is initially what got me thinking. Who's pulling the strings here? Who's the man behind the curtain? I went to CPAC last week, as some of you know.
What was the point? What was that trying to prove? That
yeah, I think he's saying
it's got to be somebody else feeding that to her.
That's exactly what he's saying. Yeah, I think he's just like, how did she come up with this?
Yeah, wow.
How did she use her team? Like, oh, I can't imagine a fucking congressperson consulting with their goddamn employees before doing testimony.
Questions. Yeah, that never happens.
Yeah,
yeah,
very strange. And they definitely would never like try to come up with a media savvy approach either. So no, your little never. Fucking diaper filling ass can't. can't even help yourself sharing it.
Washington, D.C., and I met a lot of people in politics. Occasionally, somebody would bring up AOC. I always took this opportunity to ask one question. Who's really running the show? Who's the brains behind Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez? One guy
CPAC,
had an answer.
Yeah.
He grabbed his phone, he pulled up a Politico article, and he shoved it into my hand. That's who, he said. The man behind the curtain is this guy. Saikat Chakrabarty. Saikat was AOC's campaign manager and is now her chief of staff.
That's the name I couldn't
say. Saikat came out of Harvard and worked as an organizer for the Bernie Sanders campaign. This guy doesn't really have the charisma to run for office himself. He's a little awkward. He might have Asperger's or something like that.
Whoa,
he kind of reminds me of Daniel Radcliffe, actually. But he don't let totally his normal. Disarming...
Huh?
He looks like a pretty charismatic guy, actually. Just the clip he showed, what the fuck is he talking about?
Awkwardness fool you. He's been an extremely effective political operative. He's got some terrifying political influences, and he's suspected of committing some severe campaign finance violations.
Oh, Jesus.
But we'll get into all that later. Saikat Chakrabarty is a sinister character, and hearing more about him later will give you chills. But the man who hired him to head up the Justice Democrats will horrify you, if you can even believe it. The mastermind behind it all... Cenk Uygur of the
Oh, that was worth the 10-minute build up, man. Oh man.
I didn't expect that. Oh my fucking god, dude. Oh,
look at that fucking pimp.
Jesus Christ.
God, that is some dopey shit.
Whew. Okay.
The Young Turks. Now, this may all sound completely nuts, like a big conspiracy theory, but the Justice Democrats was heavily promoted on the Young Turks. We have video evidence from the inception.
All right, hold on. Into the...
So
I hate to keep pausing, but Jesus Christ. You're meaning to tell me that a fucking lefty podcast was talking about a lefty group? They have video of it, Mike. So... And I was like, what is he, like, have a non-profit or something? And they're like, he talked about, you know, the fucking the left-wing Democrats a lot. God his ass.
Campaigns.
I think they have maxed out on incompetence. So that is why we must choose a new path. And that is what we embark upon today. What we need to do is take over the Democratic Party. Here we're going to try to save the soul of the Democratic Party by boarding the Democratic Party's ship and taking it over. How are we going to do that? We're going to run strong progressives. Hmm. From now on, there will be a new wing of the Democratic Party, and it will be the Justice Democrats.
Now, you might think, if Cenk wanted influence in government, why didn't he just run? If Saikat Chakrabarty wanted influence in government, I mean, despite his awkwardness, why didn't he run? Why put up AOC? Right.
Why don't you fucking run, genius? You're fucking broadcasting in a hotel room. Like, this guy's a fucking idiot. It's crazy to me.
dude, you're literally like a blogger. God.
Mike, I'm not fun. I don't like this guy.
Probably far grander and far more sinister than simply electing a single congresswoman to office. The goals are to take over the Democratic Party, eventually take control of Congress, and in turn, control the United States. And I know all of this sounds completely insane, but they have expressed their intentions very clearly on camera.
We're going to run hundreds of candidates, and we're going to primary all the establishment Democrats.
I don't see what this fucking proves. Like, we're going to primary everybody? Well,
somebody said this on a podcast that was widely available and that anybody, including Democrats, could watch. So
I see.
Yeah. So in a way, we're kind of in on this, too.
Yeah, it was actually my idea to make the Democrats more
nice
left.
Nice job keeping that on the DL.
My God, this is a horrible video.
No, it's a hard no. But wait a minute now. Are you really going to primary vulnerable Democrats? Yeah, that's the whole point. If in 2018 we don't achieve our grand vision of a wholesale change in 2 years, which is very, very hard, we know that, right? Are you kidding me? If you got 6, let alone 12, let alone 24 people in Congress, you know what would happen in Washington? People would freak the hell out. 24 people in Congress. Look, we want hundreds. We want to replace Congress.
In an article in Politico, one journalist wrote, "The group's criteria for picking primary targets is unclear and at times contradictory." Yeah, that's because their goal is not ideological. Their goal is control and power.
Washington doesn't care about beseeching. That's not how it works. They care about power.
Can we just... Literally, they just quoted him saying like 1,000 times ideology. They just want power and control. It does seem to be cut to imply that he is like representing the Justice Democrats and not just like speaking vaguely as a commentator.
This is cut very poorly. You know, if you're looking at the video, there's a lot of harsh jumps and stuff.
Yeah, for a guy who's ragging on AOC for going off script, he is doing lots of fucking hard edits on his little vlog here.
Waleed Shaheed, communications director for the Justice Democrats, has said, "You can tacitly support Medicare for All and the Green New Deal, and we still might primary you because there's enough energy in the district to find somebody more charismatic and compelling who is actually going to be a movement builder."
Okay.
Weird.
Yeah, wow, that's fucking fucked up that they would do that.
Finding somebody who aligns with your with the party's platform, weird.
So you're telling me that they would find a candidate who aligns with their interests and then promote them and run them, and you know, honestly, that makes me a little scared.
Yeah,
it's not the country that I grew up in.
Terrifying.
Yeah, and like, so how does he? I'm just curious how he thinks other politicians work and like how Republican politicians work, and it's just like his team is like, "Sir, here's a 500-page farm bill," and he's like, "Don't you fucking dare give me a synopsis of this, you little bitch. I'm going to take this to my farm in Iowa, and I'm going to read it.
Yep.
I'm going to mark it up."
Mm-hmm.
And that is how law is made, folks.
Yes. I saw that on Schoolhouse Rock.
It's just fucking crazy. It just fucking rocks.
No. You know why they might primary you? Because they don't own you. And maybe they found somebody that they think can beat you and that they can control. Another AOC. Even Ilhan Omar has said it's quite inappropriate for groups to decide on whether or not somebody deserves to represent their district. Those decisions need to come from the people that we represent.
Did they ever weigh in on that? Did they ever? That's fucked up if they didn't. I don't know. Did they? It was a while ago. How did she get in there? It was like she just kind of walked in on the first day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they said, they had a little sign outside that said, "You know, now hiring."
And she was just like, "Oh, I'd be perfect for this." Yeah.
You know, I don't really have anything else coming in, so yeah, why not? Why not? You know,
It is funny, but I can just tell by how sleekly produced it is and how fucking annoyingly theatrical his voice is. Like,
she was waiting for her sandwich to get ready at Panera, and she's like, "You know what? I have a few minutes. I can apply for this job." As like a congresswoman, sure.
Oh, well, I'm a bartender, but yeah, he. Sorry, I forgot what I was saying.
I mean, so what he's describing again is an election.
That's what I keep coming back to. It's just like, yeah, you're describing like how
Does she have experts on her team that help her understand things? Oh my, that's, you don't want that.
I'm waiting for the little alien behind his face to pop out and be like, this is, you know, this is a joke, everybody. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I don't like his face. It's not because he's an ugly man, but there's just something about it that I really don't like.
Yeah.
So it's not problematic.
Omar was actually endorsed by the Justice Democrats after she won her primary. The reason more people aren't speaking out against this completely unethical political tactic is that nobody knows it's happening. I mean, you might be asking, if all these guys are so corrupt, what they're doing is so obviously sinister, why hasn't anybody reported on it? Their tactics have been extremely different to anything seen in the U.S. before, and that's probably why nobody has copped on to what they're doing yet.
Wait a minute. Hold on, I'm going to go back, because I'm not sure what the fuck he's talking about with this unethical action. I don't know what he's talking about. Do you?
No.
No. You know why they might primary you? Because they don't own you. And maybe they found somebody that they think can beat you and that they can control. Another AOC. Even Ilhan Omar has said it's quite inappropriate for groups to decide on whether or not somebody deserves to represent their district. Those decisions need to come from the people that we represent. And Ilhan Omar was actually endorsed by the Justice Democrats after she won her primary. The reason more people aren't speaking out against this completely unethical political tactic is that nobody knows it's happening. I mean, you might be asking, if all these guys are so corrupt, if what they're doing is so obviously sinister, why hasn't anybody else reported on it? Their tactics have been extremely different to anything seen in the U.S. before.
What tactics?
And that's probably why nobody has copped on to what they're doing yet. Also, mostly what they're doing is annoying Democrats, so conservatives haven't paid all that much attention. The first thing the Justice Democrats did was to try to primary Democratic incumbents. What that means is they would mount primary campaigns against incumbent Democrats, establishment Democrats already in Congress they didn't like. This, as far as I can tell, was Cenk Uygur's idea. Basically, the concept was, since many establishment Democrats weren't progressive enough, i.e. socialist, the Justice Democrats would nominate their own candidates challenge. One of the guys they didn't like.
Did you fucking figure that out, big boy? After like fucking 13 and a half minutes of video of people fucking goddamn tediously explaining that to you over and over again.
God.
Oh my fucking lord. So folks, so what they're doing is actually,
this guy rocks.
Oh man.
This guy's awesome.
Like, he's a conservative psycho. He remembers like the Tea Party, right? Like, I hate to make the comparison, but like, what the fuck does he think was going on there?
Was Joe Crowley, the guy that they put AOC up against. He had been in Congress for 20 years. Other members of Congress have reached out to AOC to try to convince her to stop primarying establishment candidates, but they're reaching out to the wrong person. AOC does not control the show. They should be trying to convince Saikat Chakrabarty. He's the one AOC takes her orders from. But Cenk and Saikat's plan is not to win a couple of congressional seats. It's total congressional domination.
Look, we want hundreds. We want to replace Congress.
Basically, Cenk's plan in creating the Justice Democrats was to replace all the Democrats in Congress with his own people. Radical leftists, socialists, people who would fall in line with his ideology. And he did it. He actually did it.
Is he advocating to fill Congress with people who disagree with him? Is that what he wants? The fuck is this guy on?
You know who I want in Congress is people who are diametrically opposed to everything I believe in.
Now, you're telling me you want people who agree with you to be in charge of stuff?
How much more of this fucking idiot do we have to watch?
I kind of want to watch more of it.
All right,
man.
All right.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by this shit.
Let's keep going.
Now, Cenk comes up with a clever quip from time to time, and he's been able to create a very successful propaganda platform with the Young Turks. But if you've ever watched him, you know he's not exactly a genius. He talks and acts more like a two-bit thug than a political pundit. So how did he do it?
Oh, did he call him flashes of Bill Gilman, huh?
He hired geniuses. He brought in the top guys from the Bernie campaign. I actually did a lot of research on this, and the keys to their success are equal parts nefarious and creepy, but they are, nevertheless, very effective. And you got to hand it to Cenk. Bringing these guys on was a brilliant move.
Probably.
So Cenk had this crazy idea. Replace all the Democrats in Congress with his own hand-picked radical left socialists. And he had a brilliant idea. Get the geniuses from the Bernie campaign to do it for him. And they did it. They succeeded. And that is terrifying. Of the guys that Cenk brought in from the Bernie campaign, the two most important, from what I could find, were Saikat Chakrabarty and Zach Exley. Saikat seems to be the philosophical core of the operation, and Zach Exley is the organizational mastermind. Zach Exley is basically an expert on Saul Alinsky-style community organizing. And both he and Saikat are tech guys. These guys are not content with their 2018 victory. They're playing a long game here. 2018 was just the beginning.
That's crazy that they got one guy in one election, and then they're not sitting out all subsequent elections, huh? We got one guy in there, and you know what? I feel pretty good about it. And, you know, shout out to whoever.
2020, 2022, 2024, at which time I am 100% convinced that they will run somebody for president. For the 2018 elections, the Justice Democrats endorsed 79 candidates. 26 of them won their primary elections. Seven of them won in the general election and are now in Congress. Most of these people's names I can't even pronounce. Raul.
Oh, boy. Here we go. Here we go.
Good on.
Here we go.
And are now in Congress. Most of these people's names I can't even pronounce. Raul Grijalva, Ro Khanna, Ayan Presley, Pramila Jayapal, Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Chris, what did you notice about all of those? Okay.
Okay.
And are now in Congress.
Pay attention to
most
all
of these people's names I can't even pronounce. Raul Grijalva, Ro Khanna, Ayan Presley, Pramila Jayapal, Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
What did you notice about that?
Well, they're all Congress people.
Okay. Yep. What else? There seemed to be a common thread between all of them. I could play it again if you want, but
they are all people of color. Is that what you mean?
Yes.
Okay. Because, that was pretty conspicuous. Especially with the lead-in where he was like, not sure I could pronounce all these names, and then acted like Ayanna Presley is, this is a really hard name. I might have fucked up her name, too. Did I fuck up her name?
Ayanna Presley?
Yeah.
I don't think you fucked
up. I've never said it out loud, but
I think he did. I don't think you did.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's a pretty normal name, dude. It's really not super outside of the American experience, I don't think.
Yeah.
They were chosen through the audition process and are, as far as I can tell, puppets of the Justice Democrats, Saikat Chakrabarty, and Cenk Uygur. These candidates are Ayan Presley, Rashida Tlaib, and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Imagine if they run not 79 candidates, but 200 or 400 or 1,000. At their current rate of success, they would get 88 House seats, and if they improve their techniques, they might get more, including Senate seats.
Oh.
The first screenplay I ever wrote, I was 15.
I hope this is available somewhere. Oh, I have to read it.
This fucking guy. It's like, while I have you here being racist for 20 minutes, let me tell you about my screenplay. Not only my screenplay, my first screenplay. You know, that's always the best one.
That's the one you always remember.
Yeah, exactly.
More, including Senate seats. The first screenplay I ever wrote, I was 15. It was about a future in which a megalomaniac was trying to take over the U.S. government. He was trying to do this by installing puppet politicians throughout the U.S. Congress, giving him a majority, and in the climactic point in the movie, his puppet president is also elected. So in my screenplay, this villain effectively gains control over the U.S. government through these politicians who are loyal to him. I never thought that this fiction that I wrote as a teenager would ever become reality. It's completely crazy, but it looks like this has actually started to happen. Cenk Uygur is no longer formally associated with the Justice Democrats or AOC's congressional team, but whether or not he still holds influence over these people is unknown. What is known is that these people are dangerous. Zach Exley is a radical left open borders guy who was once a fellow at the Open Borders Foundation, which is George Soros' organization. And he seems to be the least extreme of these guys. Cenk Uygur calls his organization the Young Turks. The Young Turks is named after the
Come on, man. Jesus Christ. It's just like...
This cannot be real. Does he have a fucking picture of the Ottoman Empire up here?
Yeah, it's like... He's actually... Yeah, he's the last young Turk.
The Young Turks is named after a group of Turkish revolutionaries formed in 1911 who slaughtered 1.5 million people in the Armenian Genocide. So we know where Cenk's influence is at. Saikat Chakrabarty is influenced by this guy,
I guess we
Subhas
do.
Chandra Bose. How do we know this? Because he wears this Che Guevara-style shirt with Subhas Chandra Bose's face on it in most of his videos. That seems like a pretty deliberate choice. At first, I actually thought it was his own face. I was like, why is this guy wearing a shirt with his own face on it? That's crazy narcissistic.
Wow, that's but then crazy I figured out racist. It was
this Subhas guy. So who is Subhas Chandra Bose? He was the violent complement to the nonviolent Mahatma Gandhi. Yes, the legendary Gandhi. Whilst Gandhi was trying to expel the British from India nonviolently, this guy was like, no, let's start a war and let's kill them all.
Wow, yeah. That guy seems really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, let's defend our land from a colonizing force. Crazy. Yeah.
What does he think the American Revolution was? A fucking moron? These guys act like they're so fucking smart, and you're like, hey, here's like an 8th grade history textbook that I found in the trash from 30 years ago. And it just doesn't ever matter. It's fucking awesome. They don't care. They just never give a shit. It's so crazy. This has been a lot, and I appreciate everyone bearing with us.
I cannot wait to hear what his conclusion is.
It's just so tight and cool.
Another important thing that we need to recognize about Subhas is that he was an anti-colonialist. Now, we're not so familiar with this.
Crazy. He would be an anti-colonialist.
Do you think, what do you think Gandhi thought about colonialism?
Loved
it. The guy you just said was fine.
Loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like he might have... But, like, send more soldiers, please.
Yeah.
Okay.
I love military action, so please send more.
Can you please shoot more crowds of people indiscriminately?
Oh, I love Queen? That. I love that.
Stomp on my balls, King. Like...
Please wear high heel shoes and step on me.
You're flag thumping psycho dumbass. You're a fucking anti-colonialist too, you fucking idiot. What is wrong with you? How fucking stupid can you be? When you say words, like, do they echo in your head and you're ever like, oh, that kind of contradicts some shit I believe? Or is it just like, you don't care?
Doesn't care.
It's the big question, right?
Yeah.
I say anti-colonialist, but I love colonialism. Wait.
Colonialism rocks, according to him.
Yeah.
Political perspective here in the U.S., but in India, anti-colonialism causes deep resentment to this day. This is explained in the documentary film 2016, Obama's America. Mm. In this film, Dinesh D'Souza explains anti-colonialism and shows how these ideas influence Barack Obama because, and this is the scary part, the United States is founded on colonialism. To the anti-colonialist, the U.S. is an evil empire that colonized North America. The United States is the enemy and is to be...
Wait a second. Where do we start with that? Where do you think America came from? It's like explaining where babies came from. What do you think happens... What an incredible person. Wow, that's crazy. They think that we colonized with them. That's some wacko shit to say. And people are just like, uh-huh, wow, it is dangerous.
Oh my God.
See, I didn't expect him to actually go hard defending colonialism. What a cool guy.
Is to be resisted, torn down. This is the guy that Saikat Chakrabarty, AOC's chief of staff, wears on his t-shirt. A pro... anti-colonialist. Now, we're not super familiar with this political perspective here in the US, but in India, anti-colonialism causes deep resentment to this day. This is explained in the documentary film 2016, Obama's America. In this film, Dinesh D'Souza explains anti-colonialism and shows how these ideas influence Barack Obama because, and this is the scary part, the United States is founded on colonialism. To the anti-colonialist, the U.S. is an evil empire that colonized North America. The United States is the enemy and is to be fought. It's to be resisted, torn down. This is the guy that Saikat Chakrabarty, AOC's chief of staff, wears on his t-shirt. A pro-violence, anti-colonial socialist who dreamed of a Nazi communist government. This is the man behind the curtain. This is the brains behind AOC.
Oh,
it's definitely scarier to me that he's not a congressman, but that he is the man behind the curtain. There is no accountability for the man behind the curtain. If AOC falls from grace, he can just hire another actress. There are no term limits to being the guy behind the curtain. Just remember, the next time you see Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, she's fake. She's a fraud. She's not real. None of her tweets are actually her tweets. None of her speeches are her speeches. Her answers to questions and interviews, she was coached to give those. She's not a real congresswoman. She's an actress. All right, that's it for me. If you like this episode,
I'm convinced.
Please subscribe. And if you hate
me,
probably Saikat Chakrabarty or Cenk Uygur, because hopefully I just tore down your evil plot for world domination. Good night.
Well, I'm going to be tweeting this guy for a while, I can tell.
So for the final segment tonight, I did want to bring in a little hate read, as we like to do on the show. Now, some of you have been following Beto O'Rourke might know he's a pretty punk rock kind of guy. Likes to skateboard, loves Fugazi, loves Ian McKay.
And loves being a centrist. Might be a cop. Oh, wait, that's Kamala Harris.
So, anyway, Beto is pretty much Henry Rollins. And so, anyway, Beto O'Rourke is on the Warped Tour this year. And I believe he's talked a lot about how Ian McKay and his kind of philosophies have influenced his campaigns and that he's going to try and, it sounds like, have, I don't know, a kind of austere approach to campaign. The funding, you know, have a kind of punk campaign tour is kind of the gist of it. He doesn't come out and say that, but that seems to be kind of what he's trying to, evoke. And this was making the rounds. This was making the rounds on Twitter today.
Okay.
Called Salad Days by Rob Cox. And that's Robert Cox. So. Robert, big huge Cox.
quarter of four, by the way.
Now, Mr. Cox writes, Beto O'Rourke is a vessel into which many Democrats are pouring their hopes for the next American president. They're attracted by the vibe of integrity, youthful energy, courage, and intellect the Texas congressman emits. He has not, however, offered much in the way of detailed policy. No white papers, no prescriptive manifestos. He's even elusive on some basic questions, like where he stands on healthcare reform. As for the economy, who knows? Even so, it's possible to sketch out some semblance of what Betonomics might entail by examining the work of one of his idols. Look beyond the lodestar of the far-left Karl Marx, John Maynard Keynes, a conventional source of centrist guidance, and Ayn Rand, the darling of conservatives like former Speaker of the House Paul Ryan. Instead, consider Ian McKay.
Okay.
I just, you know.
Noted economist, Ian McKay.
I might prefer Keynes or Marx, but so instead consider Ian McKay. He may be from inside the Beltway, but McKay is a Washington, D.C. native more familiar to Generation X college students than America's political class. Yeah, I guess so.
in the hagiographic profile of O'Rourke that Vanity Fair published to coincide with the candidate's announcement of a 2020 White House run, he said of McKay, "I have so much reverence for him, and he means so much to me in my life. Your humble columnist can relate." Jesus Christ, dude. McKay fronted two seminal bands categorized as independent or underground rock. Are you serious,
How do you do, fellow young folk?
I mean, Jesus Christ, it was like fucking 30 years ago, 40 years ago. God damn, I haven't read the whole thing. I just like caught the gist of it and was like, yeah, I'm pumped. All right, so...
It's so dumb.
McKay fronted two seminal bands categorized as independent or underground rock during the last two decades of the 20th century. Minor Threat and Fugazi. As influential as the music he produced was, it was more the ethos McKay and his bandmates adopted toward their craft that resonated. Okay. Fugazi was a... Oh, my Jesus.
I hope you're hanging on to the chair because this part's going to turn you inside out.
Oh. Was not expecting this. Fugazi was effectively a startup from which valuable lessons in governance, business, and sustainability might be inferred about the way an O'Rourke administration will approach the American economy. And that, folks, is a fucking take. That is a meatball just hanging out there. I bet Ian McKay would be super thrilled to hear Fugazi referred to as a startup. Fugazi capitalism. By the way, Mike, do you know what Fugazi means?
Fugazi is a slang word which refers to something that is fake or damaged beyond repair.
So, Fugazi capitalism, is a thing it sounds like we already have, would be inclusive, consumer-friendly, and ethical. It would favor the interests of small businesses over corporations. It would reject cronyism. As O'Rourke described McKay, he really did represent this super ethical way, not just of being in a band, or running a label, or putting on shows, but of just living. Now, it's interesting he brings this up in this next paragraph. McKay co-founded Minor Threat in the nation's capital at the start of Ronald Reagan's conservative revolution in 1980. Oh, that sounds exactly like Beto. Though the band was inspired by the fast-paced thrash of the city's own
Stop.
Oh my goodness.
Stop it. Stop.
It is Bad Brains, right?
Yes.
It's not Brad Brains, just to be sure. Brad Brains. We'll be right back after these messages.
Bad Brains, which is the American rock band formed in D.C. in 1977.
Very famous.
But its lesser known cousin, Brad Brains.
Yeah. McKay co-founded Minor Threat in the nation's capital at the start of Ronald Reagan's conservative revolution in 1980. Though the band was inspired by the fast-paced thrash of the city's own Bad Brains, written Brad Brains.
And
California hardcore punk outfits like Circle Jerks and Black Flag, McKay added a different, quasi-political dimension known as Straight Edge. Jesus H. Christ.
I mean, okay.
I don't think even Ian McKay likes Straight Edge anymore. I think he's like kind of denounced it or renounced it. I don't know. Oh, Mike, it's a lot.
If you see Beto with an X on his the top of his hand, then you just know that he's still following the Straight Edge thing.
Yeah, somebody, I forget who I would, it might have been Sam Knight, tweeted out that Beto was going to like send kids under 21 into war with X's on their hands. I forget the exact wording. So now they're talking about Straight Edge. Very cool. Though it was essentially McKay's personal philosophy of not drinking alcohol or taking drugs, inspired, ironically enough, by right-wing rocker Ted Nugent's own abstentions, straight edge became something of a subculture among many young punk rockers in the early 1980s. I saw so many adults who were just such a mess as a kid, and I remember just thinking, I don't want to be a part of that at all, period, McKay told a radio interviewer 5 years
ago. This is a great biography of Ian McKay.
Yeah, this makes me really understand what a Beto White House would be like. That ideology also extended to decrying violence, even among the pogoing and slam dancing fans who turned out to Minor Threat and later Fugazi concerts, as well as racism and sex. So that's cool that they decried violence at at their shows.
This is awesome that they did something that they're supposed to do.
Yeah, and then also didn't like, I mean, you know, Minor Threat and Fugazi Rock, but it's a weird way of writing that. We don't play shows that discriminate against people, he told Michael Azarid, whose 2001 book Our Band Could Be Your Life surely commands a spot in O'Rourke's library. Like, seriously, when was this article written? They're slam dancing fans?
Slam dancing.
Just say fucking moshing, man. It's like 20. Who the fuck doesn't know? Slam dancing.
Word count, Chris. Word count.
Oh, the kids are slam dancing. Years before companies talked of social responsibility. I'm going to read this again. Years before companies talked of social responsibility or brandished acronyms like ESG and CSR to signal their virtue. whatever that means. McKay had incorporated doing good into Fugazi's business model. Dude. This person?
So awkward.
Yeah, man. Wasn't a business model, bro. For Christ's sakes. How can you not understand how tone deaf you sound to anyone you're trying to reach with this fucking dumbass article? McKay had incorporated doing good into Fugazi's business model. The band donated to local charities and nonprofit organizations championing prison reform, health and AIDS clinics, and shelters for the homeless. The classic business move. Fugazi's particularly dogmatic slant emphasized pragmatism, modesty, and fair play, not the first concepts that come to mind when discussing the indisputably punk rock Sex Pistols, for example. Dear God. Yeah, I think that's pretty
Yeah.
Fugazi also insisted on playing all ages shows, as everyone fucking knows, keeping ticket prices to no more than $5 and selling records for $10 max. In this way, the band created a supportive community, something like the so-called third pillar that University of Chicago economists... What the fuck? Really? I mean, really? That's cool. What does the University of Chicago economist... Why does he think that's a good idea to do? For a punk rock band to do that. Why is that a good business model for a punk brand?
Oh my God.
In this way, the band created a supportive community, something like the so-called third pillar that University of Chicago economist Rigurum Rajan argues in his new book is needed to sustain capitalism alongside markets and the state. Pretty sure Fugazi would absolutely not agree with this. The band didn't hire roadies, so they weren't job creators, and slept on the couches and in spare bedrooms of friends and fans, which is, I guess, where we'll all be sleeping when Beto is president. Is that what you're saying?
Yep.
There's three more paragraphs.
Okay.
This do-it-yourself approach started in 1980 when McKay co-founded Discord Records to release his band's first disc. Discord is still in business today. Even when Fugazi touched the charts and Nirvana's Nevermind took punk mainstream. Fucking
Jesus. Hold on a second.
Come on, man.
Fuck my ass. Are you serious?
I mean, honest to God, dude. Did they just get some guy from like the fucking floor of the stock market to fucking write about this? Man, it took punk mainstream. Jesus Christ, you dumbass.
Yeah. Chris, I'm going to call that debatable.
Remember when the Sex Pistols were like thrown off BBC for saying fuck on it? Mm. And the Clash and punk was definitely mainstream before fucking 1991, you dinosaur idiot. Jesus Christ, it's embarrassing. I know you said it before, but it is just absolutely the epitome of the, like, you know, how are you doing, fellow kids? Except the fellow kids are, like, you know, Gen Xers that are adults and...
Yeah. Like, older than me. Like, in their early 40s, at least.
Who is being swayed by this? Oh, back to this line. Even when Fugazi touched the charts and Nirvana's Nevermind took punk mainstream... Fugazi declined to sign with a major label, which would have insisted on raising ticket and album prices. Their 1989 release, 13 songs, has since gone triple platinum.
Oh, that's so cool that an album can go triple platinum in 30 years.
And what does that mean? I don't know, like, okay. What does that have to do with Beto O'Rourke? Does he have an album out? Like, is it on Discord? What's happening? I don't get it. Was he in Nirvana? Given all this, Betanomics platform would likely champion pop. What the fuck? Given all this, I guess he means this article, all the evidence you laid out about, you know, the Wikipedia page from Ian McKay.
Yeah, being me.
This is just amazing. Given all this, a Betanomics platform would likely champion policies that favor small businesses and startups.
Mm-hmm.
Why? More robust antitrust laws and enforcement could be one consequence, and is already a key plank for many of the Democrats aiming to oust Donald Trump. Another idea might be to make corporate taxes more progressive, so that massive companies pay more to Uncle Sam, and thus foster entrepreneurial competitors.
Hmm.
More inclusive workplace policies also might warrant some financial breaks in an or work plan. And anyone on the left worrying about spending might like a McKay-like bare bones approach to big government, too. Oh my God. Almighty, that is a lot. Holy cow.
See, that paragraph was probably... expanded upon. It was probably the article he should have written, but instead he just jacked off all over a Wikipedia printout of Ian McKay.
And now, and he's like, yeah, Ian McKay was like a super like political punk dude who definitely hates big government, and the reason that they keep show prices so low is because they hate taxes.
Yeah.
They don't think people should have to pay taxes.
4:05 in the morning.
O'Rourke's rivals for the Democratic nomination, including Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders and Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren, well, this guy's paying attention, are well ahead of him, with detailed prescriptions on how to make American capitalism more equitable. Preaching some version of Fugazi free enterprise would be one way to set himself apart from the pack. Whether that would work in must-win states like Iowa is hard to say.
Hmm.
It's actually not. The last time Fugazi...
Oh, God.
Oh, my Lord. In fuck, buddy. What are you doing to me? The last time Fugazi played Des Moines was in November 1998. It was an all-ages show. The ticket cost $5, not a penny more. That was worse than the Elon Musk.
Oh, God.
That fucking hurt to read.
I wish that there were comments on this article, and there's not. That was something. Boy, I don't know. I'm sold now. I might vote for Beto.
And I love that he's like, his other competitors have ideas. But you know,
yeah.
We can turn to Ian McKay for some fucking reason. Maybe you didn't know this, but never charge more than $5 for their show.
Right.
And the great, like, the ending was, like, he... I love endings where bad writers try to just, like, use cadence to sound like they're being profound. Like, they'll use a bunch of short sentences and be like... And that's what he did. Because why the fuck does it fucking matter that the last show Fugazi played in Iowa was in 1998? That was 20 fucking years ago, number one. So very relevant today.
Oh, yeah.
Number two. I'm not, anyway, I like Fugazi. Not saying the kids are clamoring for him right now, but you know, it's a great band.
Some of the voters that he's trying to reach weren't even fucking born in 1998.
You know who else is in Iowa? Like, everyone who's ever run for president. So they're there too, and right now, not 20 years ago, so that's kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. Makes you think. I don't know what they're going to do.
Really makes you think.
But yeah, it's like, oh, and the tickets, $5, 1998, all ages.
Ah, you're
like,
right, though.
Did you ever go to a Minor Threat show, man? Or are you just, like, really bummed out you never got to see that? Like, what?
Well, you know that he's got his finger on the pulse. Because
independent, so-called underground rock band. Yeah.
Nirvana, a punk band. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean...
Maybe Bleach was a little bit punk, but not really. It was definitely the burgeoning grunge scene.
Yeah, I could see
post-punk,
like,
really.
An argument, yeah, that like grunge is some kind of, I don't know, thing under punk or whatever. But to say that Nirvana brought punk fucking mainstream.
No.
It's just funny.
Punk was mainstream well before that.
And also, like, Minor Threat was super fucking famous way before that, too. At least for, I don't know. And then just be like, well, Nirvana made a shitload of money in 91. They didn't sell out. And it's like, yeah, because they've been a fucking punk band legend for 12 years. Why would they do that? Well, Mike, we did it again.
We did it again.
It's 4:15.
It only took 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And after this, I'm going to do my other podcast with Dr. Drew.
Hmm. Tell him I said hi.
It's called Doveline.
Doveline?
Yeah.
But it's about birds.
People call them with soap problems. They're very dirty.
Sounds like a great podcast, yeah. Actually. I would listen to that.
Yeah. Doveline. Dr. Drew is kind of like the stray man. I'm like the goofy, wacky guy, you know. And I'm like, why do you even need soap, you crazy kid? And he's like, now, you need soap a little bit, not too much, but. And
you talk about getting in your pee hole, yeah.
Oh yeah,
yeah, that stings.
Talk about that a lot.
It stings, yeah.
Yeah,
it's not good. It's not good for you.
It's not good for you. Yeah, I always thought that had to be the cleanest part of my body, but Dr. Drew told me
your pee hole.
Yeah, just scrubbing, and he said, actually. Not necessary medically.
Yeah.
I was like, what if it just feels safe?
Is now okay for me to mention the Twitter name and the phone number?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Is that okay?
I'll allow it.
All right.
Yeah.
Our phone number is 1-833 Soy Boys. Our Twitter handle is This Awful Pod. Chris's Twitter handle is Chris Caesar. My Twitter handle is This Is Not Mike G. We can be reached via email at thisawfulpod@gmail.com. I encourage you to email us complimentary things only.
Yeah.
You could talk about how smart I am.
Yeah. How powerful
yeah,
I am.
Yeah. And and how you love it when we broadcast until 4:17 in the morning. I love it. I might call in about that. All right.
I'm fucked up.
See you guys.
I'm fucked up. Oh my God, we're dumb as shit.